Hello, and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is the program where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK Medical Center in Edison, all part of the Hackensack Meridian Network. Today we're talking with Dr. Sarah Strauss. She is attending physician at the Stroke and Neurovascular Center at JFK Neuroscience Institute. Welcome, Dr. Strauss.
Hi, thank you so much.
Well, of course, next Thursday, to be precise, is World Stroke Day. And it should be noted that a stroke can happen to anyone, anywhere, anytime, and one in four adults will have a stroke in their lifetime. And it is, unfortunately, a leading cause of death and disability worldwide. But Dr. Strauss, from what I've been reading and what I understand, almost all strokes can be prevented. So we'll get into that. But first, Doctor, tell us, what exactly is a stroke?
A stroke is essentially when a part of the brain is damaged due to lack of oxygen or lack of blood flow. And although stroke is a heterogeneous disease process with numerous mechanisms, stroke is typically categorized into two main subsets. The first one being ischemic stroke, which is more common than the other subset, hemorrhagic stroke. Ischemic stroke is when there's a lack of blood flow to the brain, typically from a blockage in an artery that supplies part of the brain. The other subset of stroke, the less common type of stroke, is a hemorrhagic stroke, or this is also known as a bleeding stroke. And this is when there's bleeding on the brain tissue or bleeding surrounding the components surrounding the brain.
Okay. Now, are there different things that can cause these two different type of strokes? I'm thinking something like a hemorrhagic stroke, or if I'm saying that correct, I'm thinking in terms of the bleeding stroke. Would that be brought on by trauma?
It can. Typically, hemorrhagic stroke, for instance, the most common reason for that would be high blood pressure or hypertension. Other reasons for a hemorrhagic stroke would be abnormal blood vessels, such as vascular malformations, aneurysms, or other vascular problems called AV malformations.
What are the symptoms of a stroke typically, doctor?
Well, stroke is typically sudden onset. So typical symptoms, sudden onset of weakness on one side of the body, such as the arm and leg, sudden onset facial droop, sudden onset problem speaking, such as slurred speech or inability for someone to speak properly.
Okay. So I'm thinking in terms of what I've always heard in school, FAST. And every time they have the public awareness service programs and they're talking about stroke, they tell you to remember the word FAST. What does that exactly stand for?
That's true. So FAST, F would be face. So if someone's having drooping of the mouth or drooping of the face. A would be arm. So if suddenly someone has weakness or numbness of the arm. S is speech, so trouble speaking, such as slurred speech or not speaking properly. And the most important, T, would be time. Stroke is a treatable disease, but the higher chance of getting to the hospital earlier, the more chance that treatment is available. So time is very important. If someone's having symptoms of a stroke, calling 911 right away is very important.
Okay, I often hear that time is of the essence when it comes to stroke. I don't think I've ever asked this question, though. Why is it so important to act quickly when it comes to seeing signs of someone having a stroke?
It's important to act quickly because treatments are available to help someone having a stroke, but the treatment is dependent on the time of the onset of symptoms. For instance, ischemic stroke has treatment called IV thrombolysis, which is when medications are given through the IV or through the vein. And those treatment options are only available if someone comes in within 4.5 hours of the symptom of the stroke. After that time period, the treatment is not available. Some people with a particular type of stroke called a large vessel occlusion stroke, the time period can be extended. However, the earlier the treatment is started, the more chance of a recovery. That's why time is so important.
Now, what are some of the risk factors for someone having a stroke?
There are several risk factors for stroke. The number one risk factor for stroke and cardiovascular disease is certainly high blood pressure or hypertension. Other risk factors that are important to know about are diabetes or even pre-diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, and other medical conditions such as atrial fibrillation or even obstructive sleep apnea all increase your risk of stroke.
Oh, wow. Okay, so diabetes, pre-diabetes, smoking, and even obstructive sleep apnea. Now, when I hear stroke, I automatically just go to high blood pressure. I never really thought of those other, I guess, potential morbidities that could be a factor in terms of leading to a stroke. So that's pretty scary.
Right. I mean, it's important to establish with a good primary care physician. That would be number one. That way they can do a regular or yearly physical exam and a regular assessment of all of these risk factors in order to provide primary prevention.
Now, when you say primary prevention, what are you talking about? You're just talking about general screenings with your doctor? I mean, when you go to the doctor, what are some of the things that he or she should be looking for and informing you of in terms of your risk for stroke?
Well, if someone's never had a stroke before, again, the important thing would be to assess for any of these risk factors. So if you go to a primary care physician, they would certainly check your blood pressure, screening you for high cholesterol, diabetes, taking a good family history, et cetera. That way, if they find any of these comorbidities, they can act on those and give you the appropriate treatment in order to prevent a stroke or a cardiovascular event.
Now, you mentioned that there were two types of stroke, the ischemic and the hemorrhagic. Which one is worse?
Well, that's a little difficult to say. Stroke, whether it's hemorrhagic or ischemic, really depends on several things. Number one being is where the stroke is located in the brain. The next thing would also be to keep in mind is how big the stroke is. Typically, larger strokes are worse than smaller strokes. But again, the brain is quite unusual in that location is also important. A stroke can be very small, but if it's in a very particular location, it can still have devastating effects on someone.
So for people who are concerned currently about the current state and the pandemic that we're in, I know we've spoken with doctors about this before, but it's always great to bring it up again. COVID-19, of course, is a concern for everyone. And people here going to the hospital or going to the doctor, probably the last place they want to be, the last place they want to go. Why is it important to not ignore the signs of a stroke? Because, you know, you don't want to go to the hospital. You're concerned about the coronavirus and the pandemic. What would you say to those patients?
You know, I understand why people would not want to seek medical attention, but any signs or symptoms of a stroke should not be ignored. Stroke is a devastating problem. And even if someone is having stroke symptoms and they don't want to come to the hospital, it's a serious problem and they shouldn't be hesitant to come. The hospital is actually a quite safe place now. There's very specific guidelines and protocols in place during this pandemic. And again, the Neuroscience Institute is offering all the treatments for stroke, and patients shouldn't be afraid to come in because we can help them if they're having a stroke.
Now, has COVID-19 changed the way that you are treating patients currently, and what sort of preventative measures and protocol are currently in place?
At this point, there are some additional sort of preventative measures that we've been doing. We've been checking all patients that come in with COVID testing. We have PPE and the appropriate hospital protocols in place to prevent COVID-related spread in the hospital.
And as far as that is concerned, you know, we did talk with some doctors a couple of weeks back at the, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, and they were looking at the correlation between strokes and COVID-19. Are you testing patients who come in that are suspected of experiencing a stroke? Are you testing everyone for COVID-19?
Yes, we are. Our hospital, JFK, is testing the majority of patients that are coming into the hospital and getting admitted.
Okay, so it doesn't have anything to do with the stroke per se. Are you seeing a correlation yourself and what you've been experiencing with patients between those who are testing positive for COVID-19 and stroke victims?
You know, anecdotally, it's hard to say, but during the peak of the pandemic, we have noticed that patients with COVID-19 and acute illness have an increased risk of embolic or thromboembolic events, whether it's stroke or other blood clot events such as blood clots in the lung or the extremities.
I wanted to ask you about the effects of stroke on men and women. Let's first actually talk about the risk factors. The risk factors for stroke, are they the same for men as they are for women?
For women, women have certain unique risk factors. Number one being just hormonal levels are different, obviously, in women versus men. Pregnancy-related states actually increase your risk of stroke, so that's another unique variable or risk factor for women. And women tend to live longer than men, so overall, women actually have more strokes than men, but that's typically because women have a longer lifespan, so they're here on this earth more around than men, so they have more time to develop a stroke.
Got it. Okay. And as far as lifestyle and lifestyle modification, you know, one of the first things I said in the beginning is that what I've read is that almost all strokes can be prevented. So I'm wondering if this has something to do with the lifestyles that we have and the lives that we lead. Why do they say that almost all strokes can be prevented?
That's true. Most strokes are preventable because going back to those risk factors for stroke, things like high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, and physical activity, lifestyle changes are all risk factors for stroke. So if those comorbidities are addressed early on, before a vascular or stroke event happens, that would be the key to prevent stroke or other cardiac problems.
And as far as people who are a bit younger, I mean, when you're young, you think, you know, the stroke's not going to happen. This isn't something that I'm at risk for. I'm the picture of health. Okay, I might smoke or, you know, I have high blood pressure, but it's under control. Stroke is not something that I have to worry about. Is that the right attitude to have if you're young?
Not necessarily. Strokes typically happen more in older folks, but younger folks, as you said, can suffer from stroke. Nowadays, these risk factors that we talked about are quite prominent in the younger population. So getting and establishing yourself with a good primary care physician, again, would be important despite having a younger age.
Tell me some of the after effects. Someone comes into the hospital, they present with stroke symptoms, and it turns out that they did in fact have a stroke. What typically happens at that point as far as treatment and some of the after effects that are left behind for those who have suffered a stroke?
Well, typically if someone suffered a stroke, the first thing would be to see if the patient is a candidate for acute treatment, whether it's through medications like IV thrombolysis or endovascular therapy or interventional therapy. If a patient is not a candidate for any acute treatment, the next step would be to determine the cause of the patient's stroke, because if we can figure out the cause, then we can help prevent another one. And there's multiple reasons why someone can have a stroke, and this is typically looked at through different types of testing while you're in the hospital, diagnostic testing, that is. after that, typically ischemic strokes, for instance, a patient is started on medical therapy with antithrombotics such as antiplatelet agents or anticoagulation. And then the recovery phase comes in, so physical and occupational therapy and rehab if needed.
Okay, well, maybe you can get into some of the after effects of stroke. Someone who has suffered a stroke, what are some of the lasting effects?
Again, a stroke can affect someone in different ways depending on where it's located in the brain. Typically, stroke can affect motor ability, so paralysis or trouble moving one side of the body. It can affect speech. It can affect swallowing. It can affect vision or even cognitive or mental status in a patient.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you know, when it affects their mobility, that's where physical therapy and rehabilitation would have to come into play, yes?
Right, that's true. And even someone without particularly problems with mobility, therapy can still help, especially with speech or swallowing or other cognitive therapies can also help.
Are women less likely, this is an interesting question, you can just give me your opinion, are women less likely to call 911 when they themselves are experiencing symptoms of a stroke?
That's an interesting question. I would say just based on my personal experience as a stroke care provider, in my experience, I think women tend to actually seek medical attention just in general more than men, but that's just something I've seen based on my experience.
Okay, got you. Because a lot of times, you know, we women tend to worry about everyone else in the family and everyone else's health. And when it comes to ours, we kind of put it off to the side and, you know, oh, it's just this, or I just probably have to sit down. Everything is okay. And I know oftentimes we do tend to put our own health off to the side. So I was wondering if this is something that would affect us in terms of, you know, ignoring the signs, if we ignore the signs more so than men.
Right. I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what I've seen, I would say I haven't seen that.
Good.
But, you know, that can certainly happen to anyone, whether, you know, you're a woman or a man.
Right. Of course. Okay. And in terms of pregnancy, you mentioned pregnancy and stroke. What are the risk factors there? Obviously, when a woman is pregnant, a lot of changes happen in the body. And, you know, where a woman was healthy at one point, they can develop hypertension during pregnancy, and they can develop different things. And that's something that is monitored by doctors, because that's something that they look for during pregnancy, correct?
Yes, that's true. And you're right, a lot of different changes happen during pregnancy. Overall, the risk of stroke is slightly increased during pregnancy or pregnancy-related states such as preeclampsia, et cetera. The absolute risk of stroke is quite low, but being pregnant or even in the post-pregnancy state can increase the risk of stroke. Typically, as you had mentioned, in states like gestational hypertension, gestational diabetes, and eclampsia and preeclampsia-like states.
Well, certainly, this has been one stressful year for a lot of us, and I'm wondering how stress plays a role in stroke risk.
That's an interesting, you know, thought. I think just stress in general makes your body in a higher inflammatory state. So stress can increase your blood pressure. It can increase and change your blood glucose. So just stress in general is not good and can increase your risk for any sort of vascular event.
And does heredity play a role at all?
Sure, it does. In general, there are acquired things that happen that increase your risk of stroke, and there's also that hereditary aspect. There are certain things that you can help, and there are certain things you can't help. Again, going back to establishing yourself with a good primary care physician to look at all of these things is important.
All right. So if someone has a family member, a close family member, a mother or a father who suffered a stroke, does that person have to be more vigilant in terms of risk factors and preventative measures, knowing that, okay, this is in my family. I'm going to have to watch out for this because, you know, I could be a victim of this as well, or I have a higher chance of being a victim of this as well.
I would say yes, of course. This is also applies to other vascular related processes like coronary artery disease or cardiovascular events as well. So again, that's something to keep in mind if you have a family history. There is a strong family history relating to going back to hemorrhagic stroke, specifically subarachnoid hemorrhage. That tends to have a highly hereditary genetic condition as well, genetic correlation as well.
All right, so Dr. Strauss, in a perfect world, what kind of lifestyle should we all be living in terms of, you know, making sure that we are doing everything that we need to do to reduce our risk factors for stroke? Obviously, I know smoking, no. Lots of exercise, yes. Anything else we should be doing?
I mean, as you said, you know, nobody's perfect. So, in a perfect world, yes, of course, being physically active, don't smoke, eating well are all important. Getting a good night's sleep, having a low stress environment, these are all sorts of things that you can do to help prevent vascular events and stroke events.
Oh my gosh. And meanwhile, we're very stressed. We're not getting enough sleep. A lot of us are obese. And, you know, it seems like the risk factors are just piling up. And, you know, the current state of affairs just certainly doesn't help. But it's good to know that, you know, JFK Medical Center is on top of things when it comes to treatment you know, the physicians at the Neurovascular Center are, you know, doing some wonderful work there and treating patients. And, you know, educating the public is probably one of the better things to do so that it's top of mind. So as we approach World Stroke Day, this is just, even if you get a couple of little nuggets from our conversation, it's better than not knowing it all. So I want to thank you, Dr. Sarah Strauss, attending physician at the Stroke and Neurovascular Center at JFK Neuroscience Institute. Stroke Day is coming up next week. 1 in 4 adults will have a stroke in their lifetime. It's pretty scary, but you know what? You arm yourself with the information and try to do the best you can do to try not to be a victim of stroke. And but if you happen to be a victim, of course, you know, there's help on the horizon, and they're doing some great work at JFK Medical Center. Dr. Sarah Strauss, thank you so much for your time today. You've been a wealth of information, and hopefully some of this information will be beneficial to someone who's listening who, you know, needs to make a change, and hopefully it's not too late.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate this. Thank you.